Hello to everyone listening. I'm Jo Francis, Corum BAF's Publications Manager, and today I'm talking to Isla, a foster carer who has adopted her foster child. This is in relation to the book Adoption by Foster Carers, a new edition of our popular Good Practice Guide. Isla, many thanks for taking the time to talk to us today about this complex subject and your personal experience of it.
Pleasure.
So, what led you to want to adopt your child when you had already been fostering them? What sparked the need for a change?
I think initially how we came into fostering was somewhat accidental. My background's in education. I used to be a primary school teacher, and during COVID, there was a real call out to those people who had DBS checks and a spare bedroom. So we basically kind of fell into fostering accidentally, which was an interesting dynamic. So this is the first child we've fostered, and in many ways, I'm a complete failure as a foster carer because we've only taken the one, and we're taking her forever. So I think for us it was very much an evolution of walking through the process with our daughter and with our daughter's birth family, and the resulting kind of practice of holding the hands of the parents a little bit. Parents are very, very young, and then hearing the news that she wasn't going to be able to be returned to her birth family. And I think for us that really hit home. You know, we have three biological children of our own. Our children had got to know the birth family very fairly well. We'd got to know our daughter very well, and actually the birth family approached the local authority and said, well, surely the thing that would make the most sense, you know, they've had her since she was 6 months old, would be for her to stay exactly where she is. And we also approached social services and said, well, you know, why can she not stay where she is? You know, she's been here for 18 months, she's very settled. I think because it was our first placement, we didn't kind of understand where she can't, why would she go to somewhere completely different who don't know her when she's in a settled, stable placement. So it was kind of very much exploring that from both angles. We only found out later that the birth father had actually asked social services, which then meant that our social worker came and very delicately suggested that maybe she should stay where she is. And we hadn't even occurred to us, to be honest, that adoption was a potential goer, really. I mean, we had three children. Our lives are very busy and full of children and noise and chaos, and so I think we hadn't really gone into fostering with the view to make our family bigger. We'd gone into fostering because we felt a real call to help and to stand in the gap where other people couldn't be. So for us, that was why we went into it, really.
Wow, what a fascinating story. So, what was it like going through the assessment and the matching process to adopt? Were there any things that surprised you or that you found particularly easy or difficult?
I think the thing that I found really positive was that our social worker, our fostering social worker, had got previous experience in adoption. So in terms of a professional who knew the case from beginning to end and who knew adoption and fostering, she was able to hold everything together.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, our daughter that we're adopting has had a multitude of children's social workers. She's had 15 social workers,
Wow.
and many in safeguarding, many then in adoption. It's just been a process of broken, broken, broken professionals. So for us, having someone who knows the process from both ends and was able to carry us through that process, although obviously, you know, from a professional background, I've worked with social workers, these processes are completely new to us. We only have the guidance of the professionals working with us to go on in all these situations. And our social worker ended up having to research really carefully how a foster carer can go about adopting, because the things
Wow.
that we were presented with on several occasions were actually not correct. And so we've had many, many moments where it's been like it looks like it's all going to fall through, or something's not going to come off, or the case has just been dropped. So for us, it's actually been really mentally and emotionally quite draining, and it's also been quite draining on our children, our biological children. For them, knowing that the foster care system is amazing for birth families, so that our children have been supported really well while we were fostering, having the idea that a child is with you temporarily, but for them then being told, or actually we asked them, we said, you know, how would you feel about having your sister forever? And for them that was the absolute no-brainer. Yes, of course we want to adopt her. So for them that was brilliant. But now they're living in this tension of the now and the not yet. And they know with fostering that it's temporary. And until we have that piece of paper for them, actually, it's taking a huge strain on them thinking, well, actually, she could go at any minute until we get that piece of paper. So it's been very difficult emotionally and mentally. And although the adoption team are trying to view, you know, and keep best interests at heart, there is another side to this that is the birth family, that is the biological, the adoption family, sorry, that are trying to hold this intention. And also we've got the birth family who we have had really close, really positive relationships with, actually. You know, I helped to support contact, we facilitated contact in our home, we've journeyed with these people, and we really hope to be able to build a long-lasting relationship with them where they can have face-to-face contact and they can still engage and be involved in her life. And it's just, this is just what our family looks like. It's just going to be a bit different, and that's what we really want to be able to provide for her. But unfortunately, because of the length of time this has taken, it's meant that it's had to have a wish you well contact and then not be allowed to have any contact for over 12 months. And she was going and having regular contact with her birth parents, and there's a bond been broken that I think really, if we'd had best practice, this bond wouldn't have been broken, and actually in the best interest of the child and our family as a whole, including the birth parents, including the birth grandparents, you know, our crazy messy family as it is, we would have actually been able to walk through this a lot closer together. And some of her dad was adopted himself. So from my point of view, I had this fabulous support of having biological grandma be able to talk about her experiences and help encourage us. And I know it's a very unique situation, but for us, actually, it was a really positive thing. And because of a lack of awareness from professionals about how to choose the right avenue for us, it has meant that there's been a delay, and we've had to kind of break that communication. We haven't had that good, that continued good relationship and good rapport, which I'm really hoping we'll be able to restore once the adoption order is finally through. But I think, you know, it is something that really does need looking at in terms of making sure social workers are aware of these are the two routes that a foster carer can go down legally to adopt, you know, A or B. And
I can see what you mean. Yeah, definitely. It seems to very much have been a learning process on all sides there. Although carers who adopt will already have been looking after their child, some things will change when they adopt them. There will be differences between foster care and between adoption, and this can include relationship with birth parents and issues around things like contact or family time. Were there any particular changes that you noticed between your initial fostering of your child for 18 months and then now coming into adoption?
I think that the shift, that the onus is now on us to say what we feel is best interest. I think that's been really good. And I think IRO has been particularly supportive in recognising that we know really well. So when it's come to decisions regarding nursery and all those kind of things, we've been able to make those decisions as parents. So we've had the complete authority to make those decisions, and about where it goes, who she sees, who her friends are, and that kind of thing has been a lot more freeing. And I think in terms of contact, we've also been able to kind of say what we in a dream scenario, this is what we would love for her. Yeah. We'd love for her to be able to have letterbox contact, but also we'd love to be able to offer her a couple of contacts a year where she has good quality time with her birth family. But ultimately, we are aware that even as adoptive parents, we still don't have that complete authority, because ultimately the parents are subject to a safeguarding check and various other things that have to take place to see if that would be appropriate or not. So there have been that kind of dynamic. And I think also name changes and things are really significant. And so so her name being changed to have our family name is something that our children have really, they're really looking forward to that moment of seeing it in writing. And then that kind of like official, she is one of us, she's part of the clan. She's like, and I think for them, there's a real sense of belonging and joy that's gonna come from that moment of knowing this is forever now. This is us.
I can see what you mean. That's very significant, isn't it?
So I think that's something that's been nice. But also the social workers have worked really well with us in that. So once the plans and everything have been put in place, nursery was saying, well, we're doing a lot of work about who we are at the moment. And so what can we do to help support understanding who she is. And so the social worker was like, well, why don't we do a known as name? So although she's got her birth name, which she is legally under still, why don't we do what she's going to be known as? Because she's at an age where she is beginning to understand these things. So actually the social worker thinking a little bit further down the line, making that change at an age where she understands what she's being told, this is who you are, has been actually really positive for her. So she knows that it's the same as her sisters. And that, I think, for her, having to, if she hadn't had that, I think mentally she'd have been, you know, she's a switched on little button. She'd be like, oh, well, why is that not the same as that? And, you know, they are aware at quite a young age of who they are and who they belong to and who their group is. So I think for us, that was a really positive thing that a social worker did to kind of ease into the kind of transition into adoption. And it was a really positive thing.
That's really good to know. Oh, and actually, you've just answered the question that my next question. So how could social workers help foster carers with these issues from your point of view? Because obviously you have already answered that. So that's good.
I think it would be really good for adoption social workers to have to know the legal routes for a foster carer to adopt and for it to be much higher up in their thought processes. There are ways of providing adoption support to foster carers. And I think because they're immediately looking at the adoption lists, for some children that have had that really good birth family experience. So although our daughter can't go back to her birth family, you know, there isn't anything majorly dangerous about her having that contact. And actually, if she'd gone and got placed in an adoption situation, there is no, you know, onus on adoptive parents to actually engage with the birth family and provide that child with a holistic view of who they are. And we've read so much research that shows that a child who knows who they are and knows where they come from, they don't romanticize who their family are and have this kind of running away, I don't belong idea. They know who they are. They know who their birth family are, and they know who their adoptive family are. And they have a much more real outlook on their lives. And also they're much more settled and have much much more sustained placements. They're much less likely to break down. And so from our point of view, I really felt strongly that where we can, we want to continue to work with birth family and make sure that she knows who she is. So I do think it should be much higher up in terms of their thinking and also knowing due process. This is the route or this is the route. You know, there are much quicker routes to adoption for foster carers that can be used. In our case, they just didn't know about them. But I think there are much quicker routes, and it is something that would be really beneficial for children long term in terms of the rest of their lives, having that, you know, not having that bomb drop at 18 or having to feel guilty about having to look at who their family are, or feeling bad that they upset their, you know, adoptive parents by searching for their biological parents. I just think it's really heartbreaking when you actually, society is a bit broken, but let's do the best that we can with what we've got, you know. And a lot of foster parents are really open to it. They really are. You know, they love these kids. They go into it, you know, because they love kids.
I can see what you mean. I mean, it's all comes down to what's in the best interest of the child in the end, doesn't it? And it's incumbent on social workers to know the options so they can really make proper decisions on that. So what difference would you say adopting has made to you and to your child? Are there any particular personal benefits that you found apart from what you've already spoken about?
I think a very simple practical one is travel. Taking a foster child in and out of the country is incredibly stressful. Having to wait on passports, having to wait on permissions from birth family, having to wait on permissions from local authorities, then having holdups at security, you know, this child's passport is not the same as your child's passport, and then having to provide letters and identity checks, and even things like booking tickets to go away. That is very intricate and takes a very long time and is quite stressful. And the fostering service are really pushing for foster carers to let children have international travel now we're out of COVID. And it is a wonderful, rich experience for children to have, to know that the world is much bigger. And so it's something I don't regret having done as a foster carer, but it's something that our next holiday I'm really looking forward to not having to do is having the wrangle with the security service, but, you know, I'm not trying to smuggle a child illegally out of the country and not having the, oh my gosh, is our passport going to arrive in time, or is someone going to, we have to hope that a social worker is free to drive her to go and pick up a passport. It's something that I think is a really enriching experience for children, and I'm glad we did it, but I'm glad that we don't have to do it again.
Yes, of course. And I mean, those sorts of practical things, I mean, they are all very much part of family life, of course.
Definitely. And other things like the huge involvement of social services and health reviews and PEP reviews, and where you've got a child who actually doesn't have any special needs and doesn't have any extra support in nursery or any health or medical issues, having these constant interruptions of adults that they don't know, especially when they've had that traumatic early life experience. You know, new people can be scary, new people can be threatening. And so you are always trying to make sure that the child feels safe, and having changes, huge changes in professionals coming into their space, into their home, often into their bedroom, you know, is actually quite a huge thing to have to try and explain and unpack with a young child. So that's something that I think is going to be quite freeing for us, not having to have that invasion, but not just for us, really for her, and not having to pull her out of nursery every few minutes for, you know, we've got to go and take you to a health review, or you've got to go up here and have this and that weighed, and you know, and that's a lot of additional stuff to try and unpack for a child who's had significant trauma. So I think where we can to that kind of downscale is really helpful. So yeah, and I think that's one thing that social workers did well in our instance, is that once we switched from fostering to adoption, my social worker stayed on the case, although, you know, just me, really, because she's the only one that knows it beginning to end. But also it meant she then dropped to Zoom contact, which was quite nice, because then you've got, you know, it's not someone coming into your space, coming into your home, and you know, mummy having to explain why they're here and who they are and why they're asking questions. It's just a lot more relaxed and easy.
Isla, thank you for a fascinating discussion. Do you have any final message for social workers when it comes to the subject of adoption by foster carers?
I think even if your foster carer is not listed as foster to adopt, do check if the child is in a positive placement where they're thriving and there's good relationships with birth family. It's just worth an ask. It really is. You never know, and that the outcome for the child for the rest of their life, I'm convinced in most cases, will be really positive.
Anything else that you want to say that we didn't cover?
No, just thank you for what you're doing. I think it's really important, and it really does make an impact on the ground for these children. So thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, if we can definitely, you know, make sure a few more social workers are more aware just of the, you know, the practice and the regulations and everything behind this.
Yeah.
So that it can go a bit smoother for some more people, then obviously
yeah,
the ideal.